Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Svadharma Nishta Shata Janma Bhipuman Virinchatam Meti Tata Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Padam Yathaham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Svadharma Nishta Shata Janma Vipuman Virinchatam Meti Tata Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Padam Yataham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Svadharma Nishta Shata Janma Vipuman Virinchatam Eti Tata Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Padam Yataham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Sadhamanishtha Sadharmanishta Shata Janma Vipuman Virinchatam Meti Tata Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Param Yataham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Sadharma Nishta Shata Janma Vipuman Virinchitam Meti Tata Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Padam Yataham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Ladies Sadharma Nishta Shata Janma Vipuman Virinchatam Meti Tata Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Kadam Yataham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Sadharma Nishta Shata Janma Vipuman Virinchitam Eti Kaha Param Himam Avyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam Padam Yataham Vibhudha Kalatyaye Sadharma Nishta Sakalam Vipuman Virinchatam Meti Tata Param Himam Vyakritam Bhagavato Tavaishnavam padam yataham vibhuda kalanteye sadharma nishta. One who is situated in his own dharma or occupation. Shata janmabi, for 100 births. Puman, a living entity. Virinchatam, the post of Lord Brahma. Eti, gets. Tata, thereafter. Param, above. He, certainly. Mam, attains me. Abhyakritam, without deviation. Bhagavata, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atha, therefore, Vaishnavam, a pure devotee of the Lord. Padam, post. Yatha, as. Aham, I. Vubudha, demigods. Kala Atyaye, after the annihilation of the material world. Translation and purports by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A person who executes his occupational duty properly for 100 births becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes more qualified, he can approach Lord Shiva. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planets. Lord Shiva and other demigods attain these planets after the destruction of this material world. Please repeat. A person who executes his occupational duty properly for 100 births becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes more qualified, he can approach Lord Shiva. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planets. Lord Shiva and other demigods attain these planets after the destruction of this material world. Purport. This verse gives an idea of the highest perfection of the evolutionary process, as described by the Vaishnava poet Jayadev Goswami. Pralaya payodi jale jitavan asi vedam. Let us begin tracing the evolutionary process from the point of devastation, pralaya, when the whole universe is filled with water. At that time there are many fishes and other aquatics, and from these aquatics evolve creepers, trees, etc. From these insects and reptiles evolve, and from them birds, beasts, and then human beings, and finally civilized human beings. Now the civilized human being is at a junction where he can make further evolutionary progress in spiritual life. Here it is stated, Svadharma Nishta, that when a living entity comes to a civilized form of life, there must be Svadharma. Social divisions according to one's work and qualifications. This is indicated in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturvarnyam maya shrishtam guna karma vibhargashaha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me, Krishna says. In civilized human society, there must be the divisions of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. And everyone must properly execute his occupational duty in accordance with his division.
Here it is described, Swadharma Nishta, that it does not matter whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. If one sticks to his position and properly executes his particular duty, he is considered a civilized human being. Otherwise, he is no better than an animal. It is also mentioned herein that whoever executes his occupational duty, Svadharma, for 100 births, for instance, if a Brahmana continues to act as a Brahmana, becomes eligible for promotion to Brahmaloka, the planet where Lord Brahma lives. There is also a planet called Shivaloka, or Sadashivaloka, which is situated in a marginal position between the spiritual and material worlds. If after being situated in Brahmaloka, one becomes more qualified, he is promoted to Sadashivaloka. Similarly, when one becomes even more qualified, he can attain the Vaikuntha Lokas. The Vaikuntha Lokas are targets for everyone, even the demigods, and they can be attained by a devotee who has no desire for material benefit. As indicated in Bhagavad Gita 8.16, one does not escape material miseries even if he is elevated to Brahmaloka. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna avartino juna. Similarly, one is not very safe even if he is promoted to Shivaloka, because the planet of Shivaloka is marginal. However, if one attains Vaikuntha Loka, he attains the highest perfection of life, and at the end of the evolutionary process, mamupetya tu konteya, puna janma na vidyate. In other words, it is confirmed herein that a person in human society who has developed consciousness must take to Krishna consciousness in order to be promoted to Vaikuntha Loka or Krishna Loka immediately after leaving the body. Taktva deham puna janma naeti mameti so Arjuna. A devotee who is fully in Krishna consciousness, who is not attracted by any other loka or planet, including Brahmaloka and Shivaloka, is immediately transferred to Krishna Loka, Mam Eti. That is the highest perfection of life and the perfection of the evolutionary process. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Ganchakalpa Duru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the first words of this verse in the Sanskrit are Swadharma Nishta, and this is being brought out immediately in the purport. Prabhupada stating here that when a living entity comes to a civilized form of life, there must be dharma, Svadharma Nishta. So dharma is probably translated as occupation, the actual nature, the occupation somebody does. It's given in the Bhagavad Gita, guna karma, the guna or the nature, the qualities, and the karma, the work, the occupation that somebody's doing. So Srila Prabhupada's saying here that this is essential for human life. So the first point here in this verse is that Lord Shiva is saying that somebody can be promoted to Brahmaloka, and then after that he may attain the Sadashivaloka. But if he is a Vaishnava, then he he immediately can be promoted to the spiritual planets. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planets. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the Puranas, but it's described as the Amala Purana. It's the pure Purana. So there are many Puranas which are aimed at different qualities, people in different qualities, goodness, passion and ignorance. And this is required. Sometimes it's said that religious scriptures or even perhaps Vedic scriptures are kind of dogmatic and they're not broad-minded, and actually the modern system is very broad-minded, but actually the opposite is true. In the modern idea, there's really only room for one person, one type of person, and that's somebody who's able to put sense gratification and morals and things like that first. But it doesn't actually cater to people actually in different spheres. In the Vedic system, the society is separated. There's different, even physically, there's different parts. Even now you can go to Sri Rangam, there's the different circles. There's the very close to the deity, the Brahmins live. And then as you go out further and further, there's different spheres where different people, they can have their situation in society and they can live happily with people of a similar nature. And so similarly, there are different Vedas, different scriptures, different Puranas. Because the whole Vedic system is meant for elevation. From wherever you are, there's elevation from that point. So if someone is very, very attached to, for example, meat eating, then there's different scriptural injunctions that they should kill the animal themselves on a dark moon night and then offer it to Goddess Kali and things like this. So there's some regulation is there that the person might think, firstly, they have to do it themselves. So they might see, wow, this animal is suffering so much. Secondly, it's a ritual that's only performed in certain times on the dark moon night, on this particular night. So it's not something that's every day. So it's becoming regulated. And then it's offered to some form of Durga Devi or Kali. So like that, there is some process. Even if somebody's addicted to, and usually there's some ritual intoxication that goes along with it. So even if someone's addicted to intoxication, and meat eating, there's the different scriptural injunctions to allow such a person to become promoted. There's no such thing in the modern culture. No such thing. One is just encouraged. In fact, it's encouraged that this is a very good thing. This is a very, very honorable thing. It was very strange. Just recently I was coming from Singapore, I think, coming from Singapore on the plane, arrived in Calcutta. Yeah, I was coming from Singapore to Calcutta and going through somewhere that's like this duty-free section, and when we were waiting for our baggage, a lot of the Indian people, they were having the spirits, the liquor, in the duty-free and very freely advertising, and then another group of people came, oh, what have you got? Oh, I've got this one. Oh, you've got this one. And it was just sort of strange. Because to see people who are born in the Vedic, they've taken a birth in Bharatvarsha, and to take on the very Western idea that this is very very nice culture, but actually in the Vedic system, there is facility given for anybody in a particular mode, but there is clear distinction that is that's the place for you. You're even in Krishna book you can read there's different quarters for different even the prostitutes you have their particular quarter but that's your situation. So the idea is that from wherever somebody is they can be elevated. And Prabhupada's bringing out this point that it's said in this verse Swadharma Nishta. It doesn't say Brahma Dharma or Kshatriya Dharma or Vaishya Dharma. It's saying Swadharma Nishta. So this word Nishta is coming out that whatever is your nature, whatever is your propensity, you properly execute those duties, and then it is elevating. It is elevating for society. So this is the idea. And also in Rupa Goswami is saying that devotional service, if it's not performed in a certain rules and regulations, then it just becomes just a disturbance in society. So why are these rules there? Just like yesterday, Maharaj has given a very nice class that these rules are actually meant to increase the relationship. Because if somebody is, they're very changeable, then what kind of relationship can you have with such a person? You know, I mean, on the full extent, if someone is actually crazy, they just say one thing one day and then another day say another thing, and it's completely, then there's pretty much there's no relationship, because relationship starts from sambandha, abhideya prayojana. There has to be some sambandha or some field, some set of what is the actual situation. That I am a student, you are the teacher, or I am a son, you are the father, or these different relationships, these situations, when they're set up, then there's a possibility for relationship to happen. And if it's very changeable, then there can be no really meaningful relationship. This is one reason why the Grihastha Ashram, it's very important that devotees, take it very seriously to be nishta in this situation, svadharma nishta, to be fixed up in this situation. Because when one stays with some relationship for a long time, time is not really the factor, it means the depth, it means someone's actually positively trying to improve or work on that relationship, then the relationship becomes much deeper. And this actually creates a great shelter for the living entity. That the mind may, be attracted this, that, some other thing. But when the relationship is on the emotional platform, when it's on a deeper level, then it's the other things are very inconsequential. Some attraction of the senses, some temporary attraction of the mind, it's not so important. It doesn't get the depth, because you can't get a depth of relationship in a moment. This is a false propaganda of the modern idea of the whole French or European concept of love at first sight. It's bogus. It's not true. It simply doesn't happen. There may be some temporary sensual or mental agitation, madly in love. They even say that, madly in love, where your mind and your senses so overwhelm you that you just forget who you are and what you're meant to be doing, and that's called happiness. There may be that, but as far as an actual deep relationship, it takes time. It takes time to do. So one has to be fixed in that situation. And when one is fixed in a relationship, then the relationship becomes deeper, whether it's husband and wife, or guru and disciple, or mother, father, whatever it is. When that identity is fixed, then the relationship can progress to a deeper and more meaningful situation. So we can see in the Western culture, more or less, in the past 50 years or so, this is gradually becoming broken down as the identities, the roles are being broken down more and more and more. And the result is that people are unsatisfied because the relationships are not deep. There's no satisfaction in such relationships. And I was thinking about this, an interesting point is that in the West, they often say that, many people actually say that their most meaningful relationship is with their pet. And if we analyze from this point of rasa and svanishta and dharma and duties and being fixed in a role, we can see that the animals there are actually fixed in their nature. They are actually fixed, like a dog is fixed in his nature. That's why they say man's best friend. So you don't see that you don't see that so much in the Vedic, that people were so attached to their animals. I mean, the king had his favorite horse, or Krishna had different dogs and cats. We can hear about that. But there wasn't the emotional exchange was between people. It wasn't between people and animals. But a lot of you know, a lot of people, a lot of emotional exchange is actually going on where people say, oh, my best friend is my pet, is my dog. So we could see that this is one symptom, you know, of a breakdown of relationship. The people are not sticking. You know, the husband left. The husband's not following the roles. He's not nishta in that relationship. The son left. He doesn't care about his mother anymore. He's not following the Vedic that the son must look after the mother. All of these things go out the window. So the lady is left with her cat. Because at least the cat is always nishta. He's always fixed in his nature. You know? Or the man has his dog. You know? So this is a very unfortunate situation. But it just shows that, you know, people are actually craving for steady relationships. That's actually what they're craving for. And of course, we understand this is a symptom of our soul. We're craving that steady relationship with Krishna, with the Supreme Lord, who never changes. He's eternal. And of course, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have given this super amazing process where, but just by chanting the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can see that Krishna is always there. You know, it's not that, you know, we went to bed late and, you know, we had some funny dream and we woke up a bit of mode of ignorance, we couldn't go to Mangaladi, but then we go and chant. It's not that, you know, Krishna is not there. It's not that he changes. You know, as soon as we chant, we see Krishna is there. Krishna is always there. We may be a little bit fuzzy, but Krishna is always there. It's not that one day we go to the temple and Krishna's got a frown on his face. Oh, I'm not happy today. Yeah, it's laughable, isn't it? We take it for granted, but actually, you know, this is what the situation is. All the acharyas are saying, Krishna is eternally blissful, Satchit Ananda. He's eternally Satchit Ananda. He's eternally blissful and full of knowledge. And this is what everybody's striving for. So we can create such a situation in the material world, and that's called Vanashram Dharma, where everyone is following their duties and everybody is on a steady platform. And then relationship can actually happen. Okay, we shouldn't think that, you know, by giving up the Vedic rules and regulations, we'll have real relationship. No, it's not. America tried it in the 50s and 60s, and for some time it works. For some time it seems like there's more relationship going on, but very, very quickly it sours. And you look at America, you look at the Western countries now, the divorce rates are through the roof. The states of mental health are just abominable. I was talking with one Mataji in Brisbane, Australia, who's a nurse from India, and she's come and she's serving in hospitals in mental health. I think old age care or mental, something like that, some crossover of that. And she just was amazed. She was telling me, I'm just amazed at how many old people are just, you know, lonely and so sad, and they have all these mental issues and like serious, serious stuff as a result of this kind of idea that, no, we'll give up the roles of, you know, mother, father and son and daughter. These are old fashioned. No, we'll just do whatever we want. So we should take note if we're born in India and we're thinking this, that, oh yes, we can be like the Westerners. We can give up these, shake off these shackles of these old mythologies. Just like last week, we went down to Bhubaneswar with Harishwari Prabhu, and we went on a conference about planetariums, because they're showing us different technical projector systems and software, hardware, everything system to make our planetarium on the left dome of the big one. So we went there for that, and many people are giving speeches about how, yes, we have to show the real astronomy because, you know, we have to break free of these shackles of the Vedic culture and all of these mythologies and everything. And this, the whole, you know, really, they're really preaching it. You know, it's really, really strong. So there's a very big push in India like that. But we should, you know, if we're born in India, we should be a little intelligent and have a look. Not have a look at what happened. Well, have a look at the social situation of America, of these Western countries, of Australia, of Europe, whatever. Of course, nowadays you can even analyze the financial situation. You can see that even that is going down. But it's like yesterday I was talking about Bhakti Purushottamaraj, and he was saying, it said in some of the Puranas, it said that in Kali Yuga, whoever can talk nicely, whoever can say things nicely, then they will be in charge. So like that, we shouldn't be bewildered that this Western culture, it seems very attractive. Oh yes, you can be free, break free of the old bonds and everything like that. But this only happens for a very short time. If anybody's read Mukunda Maharaj's book, he talks about they went to San Francisco in late 1966, early 67, like that. And then there was the Summer of Love, which is 1967. And that lasted for, you know, how long is the summer? 3 months, right? And after that was over, literally, Maharaj says in the book, it was literally 3 months or something where there was this whole sort of positive vibe that, yeah, we're breaking free of the old religion, our parents, this and that. There was literally a period of about 3 months of this hope. And by the end of 1967, it was finished. Actually, George Harrison went there, I think, in 1968 and was horrified at what he had, you know, promoted as being some holistic, you know, consciousness expanding thing of taking intoxication and breaking free from social roles and so forth. He was horrified at what it actually was. So we have to hear this because we're hearing the opposite all the time. The modern media is telling us, yes, give up your roles, break free, whatever. That we should know it doesn't lead to happiness. It doesn't lead to satisfaction. Because relationship has to be based on an identity. As soon as you change the identity of something, the relationship changes. No? So anyway, this is one point, Swadharma. So, whoa, time is getting away. But the other point I want to speak about on this verse is that Prabhupada talks a lot about evolution here. So we might think that, wow, this is, you know, Prabhupada's talking about evolution. Wow, it's really true. But of course, Prabhupada he's talking about spiritual evolution. That's the very clear point. The civilized human being can make evolutionary progress in spiritual life. Yeah. So in the few minutes I've left, this is an interesting point. Evolution, what is their theories? What are the scientists saying? And when I was thinking about this, and also hearing class by Bhakti Vipana Raj the other day, who was touching on this point also, that it's interesting to analyze what are the scientists claim about spiritual people, about religionists. Often they claim that religious people are sentimental. They're accepting on sentiment. And again, that conference, many people will say, you know, oh, people just have a need. They just, you know, they just feel we want to say there's a God, and therefore they do. They accept a God. It's just sentiment. Now, we can understand from our philosophy, and I think most people would agree that there's two separate sections of our being. One is the feeling, the accepting, what you like, what you dislike. You know, I just like him. I don't know why. You know, I just like her. You know, this is the mental platform. We can understand, it's broken up very clearly, mana. Thinking, feeling, and willing. This is the mental platform. I'm thinking about something, I'm feeling, does it feel good, or does it feel bad, or does it feel, I'm not sure how it feels. This is the mental platform. Thinking, feeling, and then willing. I like it, yes, I'm going to go after it. I don't like it, I'm going to run the other way. This is one aspect. Now the other aspect is intellect, buddhi in Sanskrit is called. And this is logical, logic. Okay, my father died, his father died, his father died, his father died. I probably will also die. What should I do before I die? What is important? This is logic. Okay, very different. Okay, I think this is our philosophy, but I think most people would accept that. And actually, this is what the scientists say, that religionists, it's just sentiment. It's just on the mind. It's just on the feeling. And actually, Prakashananda Saraswati said a similar thing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was in Varanasi. He said, why are you associating with these bhaktas? Because they're just sentimental. They're not logical. It's just a sentiment. They feel, yes. So I was thinking about this, and also Maharaj was making a very nice point the other day. that actually, if you analyze it, actually the scientists are actually the ones who are being sentimental, not the devotees. And we'll explain why. Because the scientists, they will say, they will be logical within a certain field of their emotions. So I'll just give an example. For example, Mr. Charles Darwin, who was, we all know, was the founder of the evolution theory. I was reading a bit about him. So he was actually fairly religious when he was young, and he was actually going to go into the clergy. He actually spent 3 years at a seminary. Now, when he was on the ship, the Beagle, traveling around the world, he had a book by a man, I think Bennett, can't remember his name. I could look it up for you, you could Google it. But it was about geology. And he just had found this new discovery in geology that said, it's not possible the Earth is only 4,000 years old. The Earth must be more than 4,000 years old. The geology, the rocks show this, that. Now, Darwin took that, and on the emotional platform, on the mental platform, he started to doubt his religion, because his religion said the Earth is only 4,000 years old. So that was all he knew. So that is not a logical, that is not a logical process. That's an emotional process, accepting and rejecting. So he didn't make the logical process of saying, it's a fine point, I'm sorry, but trying to explain it nicely. But he didn't make the logical process of saying, okay, if this is true, maybe my religion is incomplete. Maybe there's another religious scripture that shows that the earth is, you know, millions and millions of years old. Maybe that's true, and therefore I'll go on that. But no, he didn't. On the emotional platform, he said, oh, I lost my faith in God. I lost my faith in God there, because the scriptures aren't right, the Old Testament, it's not right. So this is an this is a mental accepting, rejecting. It's not actually on the platform of logic. So then from that basis, then he goes on with the whole big theory, but it's based on that, no, my feeling, my acceptance of God has been challenged, now I reject. And also he had an experience later where his daughter died at a young age, and he thought, how can there be God? Srila Prabhupada gives an example of this psychology, where the ladies in Germany in the war, they all prayed, please God, let my son come back, let my husband come back. Son didn't come back, husband didn't come back. There is no God. I reject God. This is the same thing. This is the idea. So just like the scientists may come up with a whole big theory that the universe is doing this and it's doing that and everything, but then at some point it just comes from something that we don't know. So that is not a logical proposition to say that there is no God. That's an emotional proposition. Because you could easily say, okay, at that point where we don't know, okay, so from here, within intellect, you would say, from here, this is the boundary of our knowledge, we don't know. And actually some scientists do say like this, but in the minority. We don't know. There could be an intelligent creator who's created this, or we don't know. That would be an actual logical process. But they actually, and if you speak to somebody who's very staunch, you know, atheist or scientist, you'll see oftentimes they had some life experience, some emotional experience. Not a logical experience, something emotional that I don't like this idea of God. When I was becoming a devotee, I don't know if I became a devotee or what, but when I was, you know, discovering Krishna consciousness, when Krishna was revealing to me, luckily I didn't have much, in one sense it was lucky I didn't have much religious indoctrination as a child. In some ways it wasn't good because I wasn't trained in this Dharma and things. But in another sense I was very clear. It was kind of a blank slate. So a bit later in life when I was really looking, I remember reading the poems of Yeats and Wordsworth and these poets, and they talked about God. And it was so attractive to me. It was like, wow, God, wow. And the beauty of God in nature and the morning and the laws of God and the immutable seasons changing and all these things. It was so wonderful. And I remember showing this book to one person that I knew at the time and saying, look, and he read, oh, it's nice. As soon as he got to the word God, he said, oh, no, I can't read that. I was surprised. I said, why? He said, oh, I was brought up in this Catholic or Christian something and they used to beat us and it was terrible. So now, as soon as I see the word God, I just can't even read. I just can't, you know, I just turn off. You know, I can't even think. You know, so this is you know, an example a lot of people have, some people in my family also, similar situation, that the acceptance of atheism, the acceptance that there is no God, it is not a logical process, it is an emotional process, that they have some experience and then they reject on the mental platform, accepting, rejecting, no, I don't want anything to do with that. And then a whole philosophy is created. Okay, then there's logic after that. So we're just trying to say that the claim that religionists are just sentimental and that, you know, atheists are somehow very logical and everything like, actually the opposite is true. And you will find this to be true if you talk to them. Generally devotees, they accept things in a very logical way. It takes a long time to convince, no? This, you're not the body. Okay, this material nature and the spiritual nature. Boomer up on all of it, come on over there, jahankarayati may binaprakadashita. Aparyamitaswanyam, prakritimidi may param. Jivabhuta mahabha, yayidam daritatika. There's a difference. There's a superior living force, and then there's all this dead matter. This is logic. The devotee becomes convinced of that. Yes, that makes sense. So what's moving all of this dead matter? I've never seen dead matter move. I never left a brick in my backyard and came back the next morning and had to walk to the other side of the yard. No, somebody picked it up. So what's the difference between a planet? It's just a big brick. Who's moving it around? The devotees, like this, very logically they will understand things. So this is the point we're trying to say, that generally this claim is completely false. Generally devotees, true spiritualists who are actually logical, they use logic very, very strongly. And people who are atheistic and, you know, following materialistic, they're usually there's not so much logic at a certain point. There's logic within a certain point, and then up to that it's a very emotional thing. No, I don't want this, I don't want that, something like this. Anyway, I thought to share this with you. I hope it stimulates some thought in you. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all bless Srila Prabhupada. Is there any question or comment? Yes. Oh, microphone, sorry. Oh, just here.
Hare Krishna. I'd heard, I don't know whether Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he made some comment, because he brings up Jayadev Goswami here and talking about evolution. And I'd heard this thing where Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments on Dasavatar as being some type of evolution from no fish to. Do you have any knowledge of that, or does anybody have any?
This is you know, a hint to it, and there are different hints in Prabhupada's books, you know, just talking about. Of course, we don't see that it goes from fish to insects. We don't see the insect incarnation of the Lord, or we don't see the plant incarnation of the Lord. After, you know, because the evolution, in the evolutionary process, describe the aquatics are the lowest, then there's the plants, then there's the insects, then there's like the snakes and lizards, then there's like the animals, then the humans. So it's not an exact, you know, correlation with the, is it the Padma Purana that gives the different, you know, 8.2, 8.4, is it Padma Purana? It's not an exact correlation with that. But that's all I know. There's some, you know, hints that Prabhupada gives throughout his books of some semblance to that, that Krishna, or the Jayadev Goswami is giving these, you know, in a kind of an order of things. It's actually very nice. We're doing a project in Malaysia where they've got all these dust avatars around the temple, and we're making little multimedia displays. So we kind of have to make the pastime really small and put it on this multimedia set. It's really amazing when you read the Matsya avatar pastime. And it just says right at the beginning, the Lord accepts these forms, but he's completely spiritual. He's completely blissful. Like, it's not a fish like we understand, you know. Like that kind of fish, you know. It's really nice when you read it, how the Lord incarnates in these different forms. It's completely having fun and completely conscious, and people around are really conscious. They start offering prayers and like, wow, you know. It's nice. I don't know if some senior Vaishnava have some other realization about that point of the Das Avatar and evolution. Maybe Jananavas Prabhu or anybody, something like that.
Martin Ayaro University. And he talks about the evolvement from fish and the shelly people and the amphibians, and then mammals are coming up, and then animals, and so uncivilized man, the incomplete man, dwarf incarnation, then the uncivilized man, Parashuram.
Buddha is this?
Yeah, and then there's a missing link.
Lord Nrsimhadev. Who's the missing link?
Lord Nrsimhadev. From animal to man, but he missed that point. The Prabhupada said he stole the theory from the Padma Purana.
Yeah, right.
He stole that theory, but he took the theory to mean the body instead of the soul's evolution through the different species. He said the bodies were changing.
Yeah.
And so. But the professor was completely flabbergasted when he heard that commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta.
Was it Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was talking with his professor?
Yeah, yeah.
Where can you read that? I'd like to.
It's in the Raya Vishnu.
Oh, okay.
Regarding the your following your emotions or your intelligence, whatever, at the end of the day, whatever you're making a decision on, it's either going to be sentiment or intelligence anyway. So what is it, generally, what is the deciding factor? You've got those two fields, right? What you like and what you think it should be.
Well, Krishna says that verse, Visha Vinivatante Nyoharashidena Rasa Vajam Rasa Pesa Paramjish Vinivatane. So, I mean, we can see that if we decide something with our intelligence, it's theoretical, it's gyan. And we may be able to follow that, well, for some time. But when that, becomes to the mental level, to the level of accepting, rejecting the feelings, then it becomes vigyan, because then we don't have any need for the intellect. We have no attraction. Like people may try to give up intoxication or meat eating, but when they become a devotee and they taste prasadam and they get that feeling of dancing in the kirtan, then there's no attraction, because it's a much lower taste. So then that's when it becomes to realization of vigyan.
In general, it may not be a question of realization. It may be done. I'm not talking about specifically a spiritual subject. I'm talking about anything.
Yeah.
The thinking and feeling willing, thinking, feeling and willing process is there.
Yeah.
If you go through the buddhi program, you may come to conflict. You may not get any realization.
Yeah.
And you're saying if you do get a realization, and then you'll come back to the more or less essential direct perception of it. In any case, if you go around that way, through spirituality I'm talking about now. But outside of spirituality, then what is the actual authority?
The authority. Well, that's what it says. The intelligence should be the authority. The intelligence guided by spiritual intelligence. But that's the problem, that in without spirituality, the senses are the authority. So, according to what senses you have, if you're a lion and you have senses to eat animals, then your senses are actually the authority. So the whole thing's turned around. So your intelligence and your soul are just dragged along by the senses. And if you're a pigeon, seeds or whatever. It's like, people try and give up smoking is a classic example, and like Maharaj was saying the other day too, they have, on the packet now, in Australia they've pioneered this thing where you can't even have different colours now. So the whole rasa of, the Winfield's the red or Winfield blue or whatever it is, now they're all khaki green. They did a study that was the most unattractive colour, and it's sort of like the colour of the leather on the mridanga. It's a khaki green. And in Australia, all of the cigarette packets are khaki green, with a big sticker of somebody's lungs split open, all black and burning, or somebody's lips completely dissolved. And a big text, and they even say the font, it's Arial, size 20. This will kill you. Now, you can't go much further than that of appealing to somebody's intelligence, but still people buy them. Because on the mental, on the, they've accepted that, they're getting a rasa. And actually, you know, there's probably good lesson for our preaching in this. And of course, Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada, the expert preachers, they would try and give an experience to people first. You know, Prabhupada didn't come into New York and say, you know, this rule or whatever. I mean, of course he did very quickly, but he tried to give an experience. And when people have an experience, and that's why, you know, in counseling or something, if you're counseling someone, you know, if someone's had a bad experience with something, logic just doesn't cut it. It just doesn't help, because they're situated in that. They've rejected it. And once you've mentally rejected, you can't go there. You have to give them some, you know, nice experience. And say they have relationship problem, whatever, whether it's father or whatever. Then you have to give them a nice relationship experience. Okay, relationship can be nice. Then they experience, they accept, oh, maybe relationship can be nice. And then from there. So, ultimately, like you said, it's true. In the conditioned state, the senses and the mind are just in control. They're trying to taste different things in the material world. Out of loneliness, that they've lost the taste of relating to Krishna and relating to his devotees in a pure state in the service. And so spiritual life is reversing that, to try and put our intelligence first, Bhakti Vedanta, so that we, you know, this process is really unique. It's just incredible, this process. All the other religious processes are either fanatical or they're just, you know, total just give up everything, just, you know, become a stone, you know, something like that. But in devotional service, we have intelligence is guiding our spiritual shastra, and intelligence is there, but we're encouraged to experience within that. It's truly amazing, actually, what, you know, which is why we can make so much progress if we follow nicely, because we're getting that experience, but at the same time it's guided by shastra. We're you know, we're experiencing, you know, okay, I gave up, you know, I felt really bad about a devotee, then I said, no, don't feel that, just try and see him, her as a devotee, just try and see the good qualities. I went in front of the deity, I just surrendered to Krishna, I felt really good. Then we think, wow, I felt really good, is that kind of, you know, according to shastra, that I felt really good there? I mean, maybe, I don't know, am I just being mental, but does some other people think like that? Do you guide your emotions according to the shastra? Is that how you do it? I don't know, that's what I do. I think, is it bona fide? Or then I'll see some, like some materialistic thing or something and some excitement of the mind, and I think, hang on, is that, there's an emotion there, okay, but what's the result of that with the shastra? That's motor passion, it's going to lead to this, it's going to lead to that. So in spiritual life, as devotees, it's really the only platform where we have the two are actually going on simultaneously. And that's actually, you know, progress. We are feeling, we're having those emotions, but then we're intellectually, you know, where our intellect is guiding us. Bhakti Vedanta. This is it. This is bhakti. Because if it's just Vedanta, then you become an impersonalist. If it's just intellect, you know, and if it's just the mind, you become sahajya, you know, sentimental. Then, oh yes, I feel this. I love Krishna, you know. Krishna loves me, you know. It's like, okay. But what, come back next year, what, you know, are you still loving Krishna, or you're loving some other material thing, some part of Krishna's creation, maybe, like that. So the both are there in Bhakti Yoga, and this is really the anatta nivritti, isn't it? How to see what is, you know, how to engage, how to see what is, you know, what is good, what is not good, our mentalities, our activities, like that. Yes?
Most people experience Most people have experience of the pleasure which they get out of mode of passion.
You know, pleasure of the mode of passion.
Mode of passion. You know, people who are not in spiritual life here, they get the pleasure of mode of passion.
Yes.
And then when you tell them about the pleasure of mode of goodness and spirituality, you can tell them theoretically.
You can tell them about it.
Yes.
Yes.
So, but how do we give them the experience of mode of goodness?
Yeah, prasadam.
How they can experience it themselves.
Yeah. Gulab Jamun. You know, those hardcore my body scientists who come to see Prabhupada, you know, you can read on the tapes and at some point they're just, we've got an appointment, you know, promise. Give them a gula, you know, give them some prasad that makes it the helps.
And what practices can we tell them by which they can experience mode of goodness themselves?
Well, you know, being regulated in their life, you know. I mean, if somebody just tries, just do an experiment. Okay, try for 1 week. Just be completely selfish. Just eat whatever you want. Just treat your wife and your kids however you want. Just totally follow your own mind and your senses. And do that for 1 week and then see. Hopefully your marriage is still together. Maybe she's already divorced you. But just try that for a week. Okay, then fine. And don't do anything spiritual. Just watch karmic things all night. Then just try another week. I'm not actually recommending this, brother. Please don't take this out of context. David Gaurahari gave this class and he's preaching. I'm not saying that. But just try then, you know, say to your preacher, you know. Okay, so just try, just for 1 week, just try. Rise at a regulated time. 4:30, 5 o'clock, whenever you can get up. Just sit for 15 minutes, chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Just take pure vegetarian food in the mode of goodness. Regulate your activities. And see how you feel after a week of doing that. I think most of us, including my guru, our Guru Maharaj, she also was just becoming a devotee to try. Just, I'll try this out for a little while. You know, so many devotees. It just trick them like that. Because that gets around the mind. If it's a whole, because it's acceptance, they reject it. But you have to accept. No, I reject. Just try it. Just try it for a day. Something like that. I don't know. I'm saying theoretically, you have so much more experience, so please. I can only say something. Theory, but I'm sure. I'm not trying to instruct you, you're much more senior to me.
Thank you very much. You touched on the topic that has intrigued me for a long time, and the logic you gave in saying that Krishna doesn't appear in all the species was because we don't see it or don't hear of it. You didn't say or hear of it, but I'm sure what you're seeing would include we don't hear it in Bhagavatam or whatever. But you always have that one little verse from Prahlad Maharaj where he says you appear in all the species, or Pankajami Prabhu said, Srila Prabhupada said he appears in all the species, so... In and of itself, just because we don't know, does that absolutely rule out the Lord's...
No. Can I just make a correction on that? Because I'm sorry, sometimes I'm not as clear as what I would like to be. I didn't mean that Krishna doesn't appear in the species. What I meant was in that Das Avatar, Jayadev Goswami doesn't give the plant incarnation. But, I mean, this is... Yeah, it's just something inconceivable that... I mean, I see like... There's one verse in Bhagavad Gita. Is it Prithunai Sharanam Vinasha Dudusvidama Samsatanataya Sambhavami Yuge? I think it's that verse. I have to check in the purport. And Krishna's saying, I incarnate, you know, to help religion, I incarnate this, that and everything. Now Prabhupada takes it to another whole level where he says sometimes Krishna himself comes, sometimes he comes as an empowered incarnate, sometimes as his son, sometimes as devotee. And even some place in Prabhupada's books, you know, Krishna comes as a quality, not in Prabhupada's books, in Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna said, I am the light of the sun, I am the you know, life-giving juice of vegetables for the moon, I am the strength of the strong, all of these different things. So Krishna is saying he is that. In other words, the vision we're being encouraged to give is wherever there's strength, that's Krishna. You know, if somebody, you know, we can see maybe if somebody's really attached to sports or something, you see who's the one who wins. See, that's Krishna's potency. You can see Krishna there. And generally you find in all of these sports, even like surfing or all of these different, you know, football and this and that, there's a whole kind of understanding that people have about morality and victory. If you look at it, if you listen to the, you know, the football managers or whatever, and there's a whole, you know, it's not, they're talking about qualities. They're talking about, yeah, the morality, we did the wrong thing, we trained hard, we had the proper discipline and duty and all these things, and then there was victory. So the way I think, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way we're being encouraged to see is that everything is Krishna is pervading everything. So of course that's the aspect that everything is Krishna, but as Krishna says in Gita, it's not that Krishna is everything. You know, everything is within him, but it's not that he, you know, it's not that we can say, okay, so doing pure devotional service is the same as just seeing Krishna's quality in something. No, it's not like that. But it's a part of him. We can see him there. So Krishna, you know, incarnates, like Lord Rishabhdev is said, like he's a complete incarnation of God. His body is spiritual, but then Lord Prithu Maharaj is like an empower, is a Shakti of Asian. You know, many people consider, they'll say Prabhupada, he's the Shakti of Asian. Other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they'll say like that. Because the potency of, direct potency of Krishna came through Prabhupada. He's empowered, directly empowered personality. So there's not, it's not just, of course, on a one level it's just Krishna and his creation. On one level it's just Krishna. But then we say, okay, then there's Krishna and his creation. There's Krishna, his internal energy, his marginal energy, his material. So there's different, millions of ways to break it up. So Krishna is incarnating in everything. He is in everything. Any strength of the strong, that's his quality. But he personally also comes in different species. Like I said, every species he comes. You know, if he wants to. If we have that vision, we can say, why not? Why wouldn't he want to come as a beautiful ladybug and fly around and preach to somebody else or something? You know, he can do whatever he wants. Is that okay? I'm just following the logic. I don't have a realization, of course, of that. But he just... Yes, maybe the last question because it's getting... Yeah.